Welcome to Going Mental. This is your host, Eileen Kelly. I'm interested in the things many of us face but don't always talk about. After spending 5 months at McLean Hospital working on my mental health, I'm back. A little more insightful and with plenty of stories to share. Expanding on my usual topics of sexuality and intimacy, this season takes into account everything I learned during my stay. I'll be bringing together a wide range of guests, some beloved, some contentious, to discuss work, love, and the bizarre phenomenon that is modern life. Join me as we try to make sense of it all. On today's episode, I sit down with fashion blogger Ami Song. She rose to fame through her blog Song of Style, which she created in 2008. She's a fashion designer, fashion blogger, and global ambassador for brands such as Christian Dior, Armani Beauty, and Chloe. She currently has over 5 million Instagram followers and is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Capture Your Style. So can you introduce yourself in your own words?
My name is Ami Song, and I am, I guess, one of the original fashion bloggers. I started in 2008. I'm currently a fashion influencer. Also, I have my own clothing brand called Song of Style. And I also used to work as an interior architect, and I'm currently renovating my house in Los Angeles.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to have you on. And I think I told you this over like Instagram DM, but I actually came across your page through that Azealia Banks a little. So I think it's just like funny. So Azealia Banks basically was posting some body shaming stories about Lana Del Rey, I believe, and you stood up for her, and then Azealia Banks came after you.
In a very racist way.
You're super racist, so aggressive, yeah. But I thought you handled yourself really well, and I became a fan after that and started following you, and so I'm super excited to have you on. So like you said, you're one of the OG fashion influencers, bloggers, and you kind of, you know, you started your blog in 2008, which is before Instagram even existed. So how did that even start? Like, how did your blog come to be?
I started, 2008, end of 2008, when I was a freshman in college in San Francisco. I was studying interior architecture, and it was just like a place where I could put all my inspirations for like my design school projects. And initially it started as an interior design blog, and my last name is Song, so it was like Song of Style. But I was always interested in fashion. So one day I posted a job interview outfit, and I got the job despite having zero experience because of my outfit. Everybody there at the lobby was wearing black, whereas I was wearing a Forever 21 plus size top as a dress, and I was like very fashion-y. I really stood out compared to everybody else. And the vice president of design center saw my outfit and literally hired me from the spot, despite me having zero experience. So I got really excited, and the blog community, when I first started, literally like, I think I had like 5 followers and maybe like 10 page views. And honestly, like half of it was me like refreshing the blog post. So I posted that outfit, and then people started like reposting that photo because it was kind of new. Like not many people were posting like their own outfits in 2008. It was like very frowned upon. And I didn't tell any of my friends that I had a blog, because it was also very like self-serving. Like back in the days, like you didn't really like promote yourself. It was like really, really frowned upon. So I posted that. And then the next day I remember like my page views increased from like 10 to like 200. And then eventually it started getting more page views and more visitors and more unique visitors. So I continue posting more like fashion outfits.
Yeah. And so I think that's really fascinating that it was just like this really organic process for you. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then me being a college student, I was always under like, I mean, I had like 2 jobs. I was also working at a retail store for the discount. So I was always on a budget. So I think it was like nice for other people to see like a girl on a budget.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that a little bit. So, you know, when you first started your blog, like you just said, you were working multiple jobs. You were a broke college student. You, I think, have talked about in previous interviews, like living paycheck to paycheck. How has that kind of, you know, going through that financial struggle, like impacted the way you currently live your life.
Now I live lavishly. I'm like, I worked hard. I think that's it. I'm very much self-made. I did not, like, I had to pay for my own college tuition or get a loan. I was also paying for, like, my own rent. As an art student, art supplies are extremely expensive. I didn't have, like, wealthy parents that I could rely on. I had amazing parents, but they couldn't help me out financially. And I think that's where my work ethic comes from. I've always had an incredible work ethic, and I think I stood out compared to other people. Sometimes I was not as talented as other people. And even with, like, fashion jobs, I was not as pretty or not as tall. And every time I did castings or whatnot, I was never the prettiest. I didn't stand out, but I had a better work ethic. And I was always really good to people. I was, like, really nice and polite to even the interns who are now fashion editors or even editor-in-chiefs. So I think that helped me a lot, not coming from a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also just a good piece of advice for people wanting to get into whatever industry. You never know who you're going to come across. Like, try to be a nice person.
Yeah. It's not that hard to be a nice person.
Yeah. Do you feel like your past experiences impact your ability to, like, relate to the fashion world or the lens in which you view the fashion world? Because I feel like the fashion world can oftentimes be pretty elitist.
Mm-hmm. I think me being a blogger and being an outsider actually helped become, like, the forefront of the blogging industry, because bloggers were outsiders. We were the norms. We didn't have the fancy last name. We weren't, like, heiresses or somebody's kid. So we had no hookups. And we became outsiders. And I think that's what made the blogging community so special. Like, if you think about, like, the Brian Boys or, like, Susie Bubbles, they were, like, the ones that we all, like, started at the same time. Like, we were so eccentric and so different all over from different places of the world without, like, having a fancy, like, again, like, family last name. Whereas, like, before, in order for you to be working in fashion or to be a supermodel, unless you're, like, drop dead gorgeous or you're, like, casted or, like, have such a unique face, you can also be, like, a famous person's daughter and just become a famous supermodel.
Yeah, I mean do you now. Think that's what I was gonna ask. Do you think that's still kind of the same thing, if not more, today with social media, or do you think it's, like, less?
No, I think social media has democratized the whole industry, actually. Like, you see so many different types of people. You see people that you can relate to. Like, I remember when I was first starting out in 2008 in the fashion industry, the only two Asian people in fashion that I could think of was Eva Chen, who used to be the editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue, and she's now the fashion director of
Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, she's not a fashion person, but, like, Lucy Liu. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
famous actress. Of course yeah. I know who Lucy Liu is.
Those are, like, the only two people that I can, like, really think of in, like, fashion or, like, movies, like, that I could sort of relate to.
Yeah.
Whereas now I feel like young people, even myself, like, I can relate to so many different types of people. And, like, so, like, you can be in different type parts of the world and see yourself in fashion, you know? It's no longer so elitist. I feel like it's now kind of evened out, which is amazing. And then you have these incredible brands that are much more aware. So they're always trying to incorporate hiring, like, diverse faces, diverse bodies, diverse backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you talk about, like, you know, in the beginning of your career, no one really knew what blogging even was, like, sitting in the sixth row for a fashion show.
Yeah.
And, like, really starting from the bottom. And I just have a funny little story. So I got invited to my first and only kind of real fancy fashion show maybe, like, 3 or 4 years ago. I was doing some work with Calvin Klein. And so I got invited to a Calvin Klein show. And obviously they invited me. They wanted me to post about it, you know, some Instagram stuff. And no one would take my photo there. And I'm just walking around being like, doo, doo, doo. Okay, well, how am I supposed to post about it if no one will take my photo? So I went up to a photographer there and I was like, you know, I, like, nicely, like, I'm a guest. Would you take my photo? And he took my photo, and
he definitely just kind of were like, okay, took it. And it was so ugly. So I didn't end up posting it, actually. And I never got invited back because I didn't post it. But I was like, how am I supposed to post something I'm not a famous person there, and so it's just a funny my little glimpse into the fashion world.
Yeah, it could be also very intimidating. I bet it was so very intimidating to be there by yourself.
I was completely by myself, like I don't think of myself as too shy of a person, but I was like, everyone seems like really in their zone. Like, who do I talk to? And so how is being on both sides of that world, you know, kind of starting from the bottom, kind of as an outsider, and now you're really at the forefront of it and helping shape it, impact your identity?
Actually, a lot of people talk about also like editors not being so friendly to influencers and bloggers, but I personally didn't experience that. I actually felt that more towards other bloggers in the very beginning because it was very competitive. Now I feel like it's not as competitive because there's just like the influencer industry is like, I think it's like a multi-billion-dollar industry now. It's ridiculous. And there's just like so many jobs to go around, so many brands, so many opportunities. Whereas when bloggers were coming up, it looked like there were only room for like one or two bloggers. So that was hard. And then in 2008, being catty was still like really trendy. Like the whole hashtag of like, you can't sit with us was like very trending. I think even up until like 2010 and 2012, and that was very much not me. So I felt like a loner. And then the more influencers got invited to the shows, I don't know, I just felt much better about, like, because I think I found my core group of friends that were nice, that people I like that weren't as catty.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And feeling like, okay, here are my people.
Yeah, like I feel much better. I don't have to be, I mean, it's a true story. Like I remember like one of my first shows, I'm trying to remember which show it was, either Philip Lim or Alexander Wang. And then there were a group of like these bloggers that were all really close to each other, but I was not as close to them. And then the photographer is like, because we're all front row, is like, okay, let's take a group photo. And then the bloggers are like looking at me and it's like, you can't sit with us. And then like literally they were like all like hurdled next to each other. And then there's a photo of me trying to like escape that photo. Like the photographer taking the photo and me just like turning my back because I really don't want to be part of this photo because they didn't want me to be part of the photo. And then I remember specifically like literally their hashtag was, you can't sit with us. Yeah.
And they posted where you still can be seen.
No,
in the frame.
I was not.
They cut me out. Oh my God, imagine. But still, that's so, ugh.
Yeah, they're really nice to me now.
But does that not affect, like, I always feel like, yeah, forgive, but never forget. Like, do you remember?
Yeah, I never forget. Yeah. I don't know if they still remember. I'm sure they do. But I mean, they're very nice to me now.
Gosh, we'll get to those questions. So your blog obviously started as like a passion project, which I really relate to because I started my blog, which is no longer active, also as kind of a passion project about sex ed. But you have spoken how that's helped you kind of leverage your advertising, being authentic to like who you are and authentic to your audience, not pushing products that you wouldn't actually use. But obviously this is how you make your money is from, you know, influencers make their money from influencing. So ads and paid promotions, how do you like find that balance?
Well, I think in the beginning, the reason I probably stood out a little bit more than the other bloggers was I still had a job. I was working at an architecture firm. So I didn't have to do a lot of the paid jobs. Literally for a very long time, my blog was still a hobby. And I think that made me different from a lot of other bloggers in the beginning. And then now I think it's very important, especially for me, because I've built a trust, like a very loyal following and a trust with my audience, so that it's important for me not to promote products that I really don't believe in. It can backfire and then I have to pull out of the deal because it doesn't feel authentic and my audience has caught on that. Like I was doing it just because it was a paid job. And I've learned my lessons. So I really make it a point that If it's like a beauty product, they have to send it to me beforehand and make sure I use it, because I have very sensitive eczema, dry skin. So like I always use it and test it at least a month before I endorse it. And there have been products where I had to like turn down as well.
An example that's coming to mind is like Kim Kardashian specifically. Do you remember those lollipops that she promoted? Like these weight loss, appetite suppressant lollipops. And like she clearly got God knows how much money for that. But it's like, okay, where, how do you walk that line? You know, millions of young women are looking up to you, yet at the same time kind of getting your check.
I mean, yes. So to me, like, that's like mind boggling, because I'm like, you really don't need that money.
Yeah.
Like, you really don't need to promote it, and you really don't need that money. So that's like a fine line.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about like the social norms in the fashion industry, kind of what you touched on before, but just like representation, and then how you're hoping and working to kind of disrupt that?
I mean, I think right now, it's starting. I think things are starting to change. But I think the most important thing is like a lot of these brands are trying to be more inclusive, you know, like a lot of, like it's June. I mean, it's actually July, but even the past
Pride month.
Pride month, and all these brands that never really spoke about Pride or probably don't employ LGBTQ people from the community, like promoting Pride products. I think that's wrong. And I know brands are starting by hiring talent like models or spokespeople or influencers. They're trying to use like diverse talent. But I think the most important thing is hiring within, like within your infrastructure. Like, do you guys have like women of color, or do you have like Black queer people or LGBTQ community? If you're like standing up for those type of things, you need to really make sure those people have leadership roles.
Do you ever have those conversations with brands as someone who does have like pull in the industry?
Yeah, I think a brand that's doing a really good job is Prada. They actually hire like their influencer outreach people, influencer management people. They actually hire like Black talent or Black people, which I think is incredible, because a lot of people will just hire influencers. Like they'll make
It's like the facade.
Yeah,
it's
just like, the facade is like, oh yeah, like we're very woke.
But it's not like authentic.
Yeah, because like everybody on the board is still all white.
And like probably old and a man.
Yeah, whereas Prada, I actually see the change. Obviously, we can't replace Miuccia. You know, she's Prada. But then again, I actually see like the people who do the outreach, they're actually like a diverse background, or like the new people they hire, I've seen like a change. And then recently I was in Rome. I was invited to like this museum thing they were doing with Damien Hirst, and all the influencers that were invited, there was not one white person, which was interesting. I don't know if that was purpose, but yeah, I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but it was the most diverse influencer program that I've ever seen. So it wasn't just like a one token Black person, one token Muslim person, one token Asian person.
Yeah.
It was just truly so diverse.
That's really, I mean, that's great. I mean, I think it needs to move in that direction. I just always hesitate when like there are these huge corporations, and like even for Pride, like I remember driving down Houston, you see like Nike next to the big Calvin Klein billboard, and then there's Adidas, and it's like they all have their Pride campaigns going on, and it's like, okay, and then at the end of the month, are they going to rip it off the wall? Then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what your life was like growing up and your family?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles. And my parents separated when I was pretty young, but they were like not really upfront about them separating. It was just like very wild. My dad like left, but then again, he was still in our lives. So he was like very in and out, but he was incredible. My mom like got really depressed, I remember. And there are moments where like my parents, like our finances like fluctuated a lot. So like we moved a lot. So my sister and I, like we went to a new school almost like every 2 years. So I think that affected me a lot, because I was always like the new kid at school. So I wanted to fit in, and I could never fit in. Most importantly, because I was Asian, but also like we were always, even though we didn't grow up with a lot of money, my parents always tried to put us in like good school districts. So all these kids are like much wealthier. I mean, they always got driven to school. They had the newest clothes. So I think in a sense, like that always made me, I grew up always comparing myself to like my peers. And then I realized at a young age that I was the have-nots. I understood who's the haves and like who are the have-nots. And I fell into the have-nots. But then again, because I always wanted to be likable, so I try to be like either the funny kid or like the athletic kid or the most stylish kid. And then somehow like that all morphed into who I am now.
Evolution of Ami song. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like growing up with that instability affected your mental health?
Oh yeah, for sure. Which is why like I started doing like intense therapy probably like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then earlier this year or several months ago, I went to like this crazy like therapy retreat called the Hoffman process. So it's like a whole, like it's basically like rehab, but for like a mental rehab. But you don't have like addiction problems. You just have issues that you want to solve and you just want to be a better person. You're there for almost a week with no access to phone or outside contact, no social media, nothing, no electronics. And then it's like almost like 10 hours of therapy every single day, which was very helpful. Like? It was intense.
And so you went for like 7 days?
Yeah, I went for, I think it's 6 days. And then you have to stay 2 days all by yourself. You can't have like outside contact. So that you're like sitting with your thoughts or like meditating or you're just like walking without listening to things, you know, so that mm-hmm. you're just sitting with like just trying to process what has happened the previous week. And I did that. My boyfriend did it first. And then I did it about a month later. And it's been incredible for both of us. Like I see such a big difference in my boyfriend. Like I love him like a million times more, which is crazy because he's just become such a better person. Like he was already amazing, but now he's even better. And then even my best friend, Jared, actually mentioned it today to me. He was saying like, yeah, I know I haven't said this, but you've changed in such a good way. Like you're more relaxed, you know, not as stressed. So it's been great. I've really taken the initiative to take active care of my mental health. And I realized like for me, therapy's been great because it's just, it's almost like, I love constructive criticism because it's only going to better myself. So when somebody is giving me constructive criticism, like a therapist is telling me something or a friend is giving me like good constructive criticism, not just like judging me, but it's constructive and it makes sense. I love taking it. I always want to know how can I be a better person? Like even with my past employees, I always ask them like, what could I have done differently? How could I have been a better boss or like a better mentor, because that's only going to better me.
That's really great advice. And I think it takes a certain level of strength and humility to be able to hear that and not get defensive, you know, not take it as like a personal attack. So I think that says a lot about you as a person. I know that you've talked about publicly that like initially you were actually really resistant to seeking therapy because of your background, your parents. And I think you said you attribute it to like growing up in a Korean American family and emotional wellness, maybe not being like at the forefront of conversation. Do you have any advice for listeners who maybe come from families where it's not as accepted, but they do want to seek out therapy?
Yeah, I think the reason I like to talk about it a lot and I have no shame about talking about my mental health is I know because I was one of those girls growing up. I really felt like I didn't think that something was wrong with me per se, but I know how I was feeling was not right. Mm-hmm. And I did not like the way I was feeling. And I just wanted to get out of my head or like run away, disappear. But then again, I think growing up in LA, because I'm like constantly seeing a lot of like homeless people with like mental issues, I always thought, okay, I don't have mental issues. Like what I see on the streets, like that's mental issues. So like they need help, but maybe I don't need help. And until I realized like, wow, I'm so depressed. I'm so suicidal. Like this is not right. And for me, I didn't ask my parents if I could go see therapy. I just knew I needed it for myself. I've never like waited until somebody gave it to me. I had to just actively seek it. And I think a lot of times people are kind of confused to like where to go first or like where to even start. But if you really want to get better and like want to find help, you have to also actively seek it and ask for it. Ask around, you know, don't feel embarrassed. Ask any of your white friends. I'm sure they see a therapist. So yeah, it's very important. And that's what I did. I asked like three of my friends and then they referred me to their therapist. And I spoke to all the therapists like via a text message and a phone call. And then I stuck with the one that I really like clicked with.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also great advice that like, yeah, it's someone you're going to be working with. So you need to interview them. Don't just take the first person that like jumps off the page.
Sometimes, I mean, you're desperate. So you want to jump, take the first person.
Of course.
But I think once you get that first experience, I think you'll know what you like and what you don't like. It's just like sex. When you first have sex, you don't know what you like. But then again, after that first experience, you're like, okay, I know what I don't like.
You're like, yeah, I know what's working for me and what's not. And how to navigate it. So you've also publicly talked about on your YouTube channel, I believe, like having an eating disorder. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that for listeners who are struggling with any disordered eating. If you have any advice or helpful tools or just any words of wisdom.
Well, I'm still like battling it. So I have my good days and my bad days, mostly good days lately. I think my first thing was to acknowledge and admit that I did have an eating disorder and turns out almost all my friends have eating disorders. If you've ever dieted before, you technically have some kind of eating disorder. And it's so sad because we're kind of conditioned. Like women were so conditioned to diet since such an early age, like a very, very young age. And now what's been really helping me a lot is working on intuitive eating. So my thing was I used to binge and then like fast, like withhold food for a very long time. And then with like the rise of like intermittent fasting, it got really to an unhealthy point where like I would only eat within the 4-hour window and then not eat for like for a very long time.
Yeah.
But I was binge eating and then I was always feeling bad. I'm like, oh my gosh, I ate so much within like that 4-hour period. So I'm not going to eat for like this whole day. And then obviously I'm going to be famished. So it's like going back into that cycle, back and forth, back and forth. So I had to just snap out of it. I think actually being at Hoffman was when it kind of, I had to stop because I was with other people. So like when I'm at home, it's so much easier to binge eat or like restrictive eat or like do a diet because I'm home and I'm in my environment. But when I was at Hoffman, you have to eat during the meal times, like, and you can't be like the only one that's not eating because it's like such a small group that everybody notices everything. So I just like ate like whatever at Hoffman. And then I was obsessively always weighing myself every single day before. And then when I got back from Hoffman, obviously I obsessively weighed myself to see if I gained weight. And turns out I didn't gain any weight. I was like, that's weird. And then I came across this podcast like so randomly. I think this was like actually before Hoffman, about intuitive eating. She's this author. Her name is like Evelyn Tippett or something. She wrote a book about intuitive eating. And it was on Sam Harris's 10% Happier podcast, which randomly, I randomly saw it. It was like on my Discover page or something. And then I listened to it and I was like, oh my gosh, I am doing what other people are doing. Or like, this is why I can't get out of this cycle, is because I binge and then restrict, binge and restrict. It's like such a toxic cycle. So I just have to really listen to my hunger cues. And because I had avoided listening to my hunger cues, I just didn't know when I was hungry. I really had no idea. So I'm like slowly training myself back to like eating when I'm hungry, eating whatever food I want to. I was also obsessively, I forgot the term, but like there's a term for people who eat like extremely healthy. They're like, do you know what that term is?
Yeah, I don't know that term off
the top of my head. My boyfriend just sent it to me too, because he's like, oh my gosh, this is you. but there's like an actual term for people who are like obsessively anal about like only eating like healthy food and like just like overdoing it. It's like an actual thing. And so I was part of that too. I was like, no gluten, no dairy. And then just, I could enjoy food. And I think that's when I became even more obsessed with food and my body and how my body was looking. So now, yeah, I'm being much more mindful of just eating whatever I want to eat.
Do you feel like working in the industry that you do has kind of perpetuated or aggravated these existing issues that you've had?
Yeah, 100%. Of course. Yeah. Because as much as the media and social media and everything, or even like the fashion industry, we're much more embracing towards different types of body sizes and different races and like different types of beauty. Still, the people that are being hailed as like desirable, they still have the exact same look. They have the same nose, same lips, the same eyes. So I think because of all of that, yes, I fall into the victim of like really falling into that trap of, okay, like I need to diet myself. I need to look this way. I need to have a bigger butt, smaller waist. Like I need to go here, X, Y, and Z to be accepted and to be desirable, which is so toxic.
So toxic. And I mean, I think what's so important about us discussing this is like, you know, we both have followings on Instagram, and I'm sure that there's many, many, many young women and girls who, you know, look up to you and are like, she's perfect. I want to be her. Her life is perfect. And so to hear you discuss these things that like, just like anyone else, like you are a victim to comparisons, as am I. And I think it's really relatable and also kind of sad.
It's honestly so sad.
It's so sad that like, why does just every woman, I feel like, feel this way?
I actually like, because right now I'm in a really much like healthier headspace. Like I'm in such a good headspace compared to where I was exactly a year ago. And I feel so bad for my younger self. Like I feel bad for like the 2019, 2018, 2015 Ami, trying so hard to be skinnier when she was already thin, trying so hard to just like be desirable or likable and somebody that she's not, you know. Like I had so many, or, and I have so many incredible qualities. And instead of like investing in those qualities, I was trying to have the other qualities that other people have, you know, that come naturally to them. And I was just trying to chase after that when I had other amazing qualities.
Yeah. Or just obsessing over appearance. You know, and like you said, you have so many other amazing qualities that are honestly more important. Like women, people have so much more to offer than what they look like.
Absolutely. And I see it as I get older. I really see that like people who have more substance, like a smart woman or somebody who's doing like a lot of charity, or like a funny, interesting woman. Like to me, those people are so much more desirable and interesting. And I feel like they have like a longer, I know it's sad to say, but shelf life.
Yeah, I know. Well, isn't that the fear? Because aging or running out or whatever and not investing in these other parts of yourself. Do you feel okay? I feel like we covered, you know, your family and like how you got started, and obviously we dove into like the mental health portion. I want to really talk about social media with you and being like an active online person. Like, have you met a lot of your friends online?
Yeah, like influencers and whatnot. Yeah, I met a lot of them online.
Do you ever feel, and maybe this is just me, but like, have you ever felt, or do you ever feel paranoid of like people's intentions of like being friends with
like other influencers?
Yeah, other influencers or just people in general, like maybe in the same line of work because you are so successful and have had such an awesome career. I don't know if that stuff crosses your mind.
No, I think maybe before I could have thought that way, but nowadays I really feel like I'm in such a good space. I think when I was insecure, much more insecure, I was always like, oh, why is this person wanting to be my friend? And then now I'm like, of course they want to be my friend. I'm so cool. Why don't they want to be my friend?
No, of course. And I think I mean aligned with that, like, oh, are they, you know, I have a lot of followers and I'm really successful and I have a lot of connections and I've worked so hard for where I am. Do you keep your circle tight is what I mean.
Actually, okay, now I get it. So when I was starting out, I was one of the very few like influencers that started working with a lot of luxury brands. Mm-hmm. And then some of like my other influencer friends have always asked me like, hey, can I get this contact? Like from this brand, like from Dior, from LV, or like Prada, Gucci, whatever. And I actually didn't mind sharing those contacts because I felt like there was lots of room to go around. And eventually they're going to probably reach out to my other influencer friends. And I also felt like I'm sure at one point somebody has helped me along the way too. Yeah. So I think I stopped thinking that way. Like, okay, they're going to take my contact, you know, like, and I think this is something that I also learned from, do you know Jen Atkin from Way?
So I mean, I don't know her personally, but I know who she is.
So she's really good about this where she's so good at sharing. So I also try to really keep that in mind. So I don't come from the scarcity mindset. I come from the abundance mindset. I feel like there's a lot to go around. And if I have good intentions, even if somebody has bad intention, is trying to use my contact or whatever to get ahead, it's not going to last for them. And I'm not going to lose sleep over that. So I'm just really going to have good intentions so then I can continue to get good karma. That's how I think.
I think that's a great way to think and kind of manifest your like, yeah, if it's not meant to be, it won't happen. If they have bad intentions, it's ultimately going to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, because I think it's very common for, people wanted to like reaching out to me because of how many followers I have. Like if they didn't know that I had a lot of followers, would they talk to me? Maybe not, you know, like, but I mean, it's so hard to track all of that. And I'm just going to like go crazy trying to like be like, oh my gosh, what is this person's intentions? But to your point, I do have a very small circle. I'm not friends with like everybody. I'm like friendly with everybody. I have a lot of acquaintances, but I'm not inviting them to my house for game night.
What would you do career-wise if you weren't in fashion or blogging? And I'm also going to throw in interior design.
Oh, I was going to say I would be an interior designer.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would have. So if I was not in fashion at all, like zero fashion, I think I would have wanted to be maybe like an actress.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I think I would have had that thought like now, like not when I was growing up, because for sure, like when I was growing up, I didn't think I had even a chance because me being an Asian American, I never saw anybody other than Lucy Liu on TV. But nowadays, like I keep seeing so much, you know, representation in like the media. So I would have probably thought, oh my gosh, I have a chance. Yeah. And I would have wanted to do that. Yeah.
Sandra Oh is like one of my favorite all-time actresses. Mm-hmm. I'm so obsessed with her. Do you have any advice for people who are looking to break into the fashion industry, how you've managed your success, and just any words of wisdom?
I think they have to know that this is so annoying to hear, but there are no shortcuts. Everybody thinks there's a shortcut, but I am where I'm at because I've done it for like 10 years. You know, I really started from the bottom. And a lot of the successful people in the industry that I see, they've like literally worked so hard. And there's no such thing as like really like easy. Like you can't really make it like that unless you're somebody's like, I don't know, like a famous last name, you know? And even then you still have to prove your worth because you're constantly going to be attacked by the audience and everybody like saying like, oh my God, you had it so easy. So I think that's the thing. Internships are amazing. Like I know so many people, I mean, I started as an intern, but I know so many people who started as an intern who became an editor in chief.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just go out and get that experience.
Yeah. Or Shiona Turini, who is a costume designer. She was like an intern or receptionist at Tom Ford. And now look where she's at. She's a costume designer for Insecure, like a lot of great movies. So I think that's my advice, that if you're trying to take the shortcut, you're not going to last. Mm-hmm. So, and then like, just give away your pride, just start somewhere, intern, reach out to a lot of people, and then see if you can shadow them. A lot of people work for free. Nowadays, I don't think it's legal. Like, I pay every single one of my interns. So, but if you're like eager and you have something to offer, like most likely people will hire you.
Yeah, definitely. Do you do your brand deals yourself, or do you have an agent?
I have an agent/manager, yes.
Okay, who helps you with that, kind of like more of the business aspect?
So, yeah, whenever our brands reach out, we make sure whether it's like something that I'm interested in, does it align with my personal brand? And then if it does, then I connect them with my manager. So then my manager/agent negotiates the money and then what the actual contract would look like. And then, yeah, and then I do the brand deal.
I mean, I just think that's something that gets missed on social media. Like, I feel like people don't really talk about the logistical side of things. So it's interesting to hear that from you, because, yeah, people don't know how much goes on behind the scenes. So I think it's important.
Do you have an agent or manager as well?
I don't have a manager, but I do have an agent. And so if I get kind of brand deals, if I want to move forward, then I'll send it to my agent, or it will come through my agent. But like this podcast, for example, I'm like doing and funding on my own. Mm-hmm. So like that isn't coming through like a production company or anything.
Wow.
So yeah, we'll see what happens with it. But I'm feeling good about it, and like the direction. I'm like excited to be having these like really real conversations with people. So I'm hoping it does its thing. We'll see.
I mean, you ask a lot of great questions, and you yourself seem so aware and self-aware as well, which I think is amazing.
Thank you. What's something people don't know about you?
People don't know about me. It's kind of random. I used to do Taekwondo. And then I love boxing. If I could enter like a fast eating contest, I feel like I could win.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you incorporate like exercise? Like, obviously we talked about the kind of the body dysmorphic stuff previously, but like, do you incorporate exercise into your routine, and does that help you kind of keep things at bay?
Well, what was very unhealthy for me was before I would work out because I was punishing myself. Like, I need to go hiking because I ate like shit. It was always that, instead of like, I'm going to work out because it makes me feel good. Now I just love working out. It's like insane how much I just love working out. Like boxing, it just releases all my like negative energy. Like when I'm like punching the punching bag, if anybody pisses me off, I'll do walks. I have two dogs, so I have to walk them. But I used to like walk with like headphones on, but now I don't listen to anything most of the time when I'm walking my dogs. It's like a short walk, it's like 20 minutes. But I'm like, I walk in silence so I can like think, basically meditate, or like just look around. I think that's something that we don't do a lot. Like, we're always constantly listening to things. So like, we barely get to sit alone with our own thoughts. And then sometimes those thoughts come at night and you can't sleep.
Yeah. Do you take any time like off of your phone?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were asking me, like, especially when I was traveling, how do I balance getting content and like really enjoying my travels? And if you see me, like, sometimes like post like on stories or on my feed all at once, because like when I'm like, I was just recently in Italy with my boyfriend and his family, and there were like maybe like 4 days. I was actually already there for 4 or 5 days, and I hadn't started posting until like I was about to leave, because I was just trying to be present. I was taking photos, I was getting content, but I wasn't also posting and like uploading. I was just keeping it all in my phone, so that when I just like on the plane, or if I'm just like alone and I have time, I'll just post.
Well, I think that's really important for mental health, you know, prioritizing time away from the phone, time alone, and not letting social media like overtake your life. And I think as someone who, you know, has your career blogging and on Instagram and YouTube, that you can even do that is really great to hear for people.
Yeah, because for sure there was a moment where I was so addicted to my phone, so addicted to how many likes I was getting, so addicted to what other people were doing. Like I was on my own vacation, but yet I was always watching what other people were doing on their stories. Yeah. And it was really unhealthy. And it was really like, I think last year I started like being more aware. So whenever I wake up, I don't check my phone. My phone's always on airplane mode. I really check my phone much later throughout the day when I'm like ready to take it all in. And even at night, right before bed, I'm not good at it, but like I'll have a cutoff time. So like either after 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., I'm not going to look at my phone. And then I'll read a book instead. And I think it helps me sleep better. It helps my mental state. I've muted a lot of people that were, you know, making me feel bad. They're not making me feel bad, but because I'm feeling insecure, like I feel bad, like watching their stories. And maybe they're like acquaintances or friendly people that I follow that I cannot unfollow, you know, like just mm-hmm. because. So then I just like I just mute them so then I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's good advice. Mm-hmm. And I also think Instagram getting rid of that stupid freaking feature that they had for forever where you could see what everyone was liking and like remember that. Like yeah. now they incorporate the mute button. Like they're like slowly doing things that I actually feel like are helpful. Even though that may not be their intention, but who knows? Maybe one last quick question. Mm-hmm. If you want to share any new projects that are coming up or what you're working on, little nice plug.
Yeah, well, we're always working on like new Song of Style drops. So you guys can shop my collection on Revolve. A lot of the pieces thankfully sell out the first couple of days, so I would hurry. So yeah, we have like lots of great summer pieces coming out, which I'm excited for everybody to see.
Okay, cool.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. This is so amazing.